Begin the current daf, instead of the Sanhedrin daf chaf, begin 17 lines down for the top of the Amud, where the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing the theme of the previous Mishnah, discussing the laws of a Melech regarding the king. Says the Mishnah, Meis loy meis, if a king has a relative that passes away, says the Tanna Kamma, Ein liyotzei mipesach palterin shelo, doesn't leave the entryway of his palace, it's not honorable for a king to leave and follow that procession. He disagrees. He says, "Imroitz alotz is achar mita yetz." If he wants to go after the coffin, he's allowed to go. She came at Tina, but David she yetz achar mitasel shel Avner. As we find that David Melech went after the coffin of Avner when he was being buried. Shemak says the pasuk in Shmuel Bay. It says, "Vamelech David hoylech achar mita," that the king David went after the coffin. So we see that a king, if he wants to, is allowed to. And that Amr Leh, they said back to Rabbi Huda, and they disagreed. They said, no. A king usually is not allowed to go. That was an extenuating circumstance because David HaMelech had to appease the people that they should not suspect him of having a role in Avner's death. And that's why he went to the Levaya. Now, continues the Mishnah, when they give that first meal for the mourner, and if the king lost a relative, they give him that first meal, all the people, they sit on the floor. But who may serve Allah Dargish, and he sits on a Dargish, which a higher level than we said by a Kohen Gadol, where he sits on the bench. Here the king, he sits on a Dargish, which the Gemara will explain what that is. Now, a similar machlekes as we have in the Mishnah regarding this, that David HaMelech had gone behind the coffin, was that we could learn that halacha from, or was that it was an exception to the rule? It says the Gemara, turn around and learn the Braisa. Malkum shenogu noshim lotzis achar hamita yaitzis. The place where the custom is that women go behind the coffin, so that's how they go out by the Levaya. Lefnei hamita yaitzis. If the custom is that they go in front of the coffin, then that's how they go. Which Tosis explains that, according to this opinion that says that they go in front of the coffin, and since it's a Levaya, a funeral is a time of pain, we don't have to be concerned that the women are going to be in the front and the men behind, and that they're going to think thoughts about the women. However, he brings from the Yerushalmi these different customs is brought as a machlekes, where there is an opinion that says that women go in front of the coffin because they cause death to the world by Adam and Chava, that Chava gave Adam to eat. But then there are the places that have the custom that the women go behind the coffin and the men go in front of the coffin because it's degrading for Jewish women that men should be staring at them from behind. And therefore, that's the understanding of these two different customs. So says the Tanna Kamma that whatever the custom is, that's how they do. He says, however, no, la'olam nashim lifnei hamita yaitzis. It says, no, women always go in front of the coffin. He says, because she came at Tina with David, because we find by David, she'yatza achar mitasa shel Avner, that he went behind the coffin of Avner. Now, if you would think that women are behind the coffin, what do you think, David's going to go with the women behind? Obviously, if David went behind the coffin, that the custom is that the women go in front of the coffin. Shneim, like it says, the pasuk in Shmuel Bay, it says, v'amelech David hoylech achar mita, that the king David, he went behind the coffin. That Amar Loi, the Tanna Kamma, the Chacham said back to Yehuda, as they said in the Mishnah, that you can't learn out from David in this incident. Lahaya had David el lafayis es am in the spaisu. This that David HaMelech went behind the coffin was only because he wanted to appease the people, and he appeased them because shahaya David yaitzim bein hanashim benichnas lebein hanashim. No, women could be even behind the coffin. So what's David doing there? Because David really, as we said in the Mishnah, shouldn't even have gone out in the first place. He went out to appease them, so he wanted to appease both the men that were in front of the coffin and the women that were behind the coffin. So v'yatzim ibein hanashim and nichnas lebein hanashim. He went behind, but then he left the women and he went amongst the men. So there's no proof that why was he doing there, because he wanted all the people, both the men and the women, to know he harbored no ill feelings towards Avner. He wasn't that who wanted him killed. Shemek says in the pasuk later on, says v'yedu kala am b'chol Yisrael, that all the people, all the Jewish people know. That because the king was not the one who wanted Avner dead. But again, you can't learn out to say that if David was behind, that means the women must have been in the front. To the contrary, he went behind to go appease the women too. Similarly, that we find Darish Rava expounded. He says, Ma'idah said, what does this mean in the pasuk over there? It says, all the people came to give David that the mourner's meal. Now, the reason is because it's ksiv lahachris. The way it's written, it's written with a chaf. That's written to cut him down. The karina lahachris, but yet we read it as if it was with a vase, which is to console him, to give that the mourner's meal. Which tells us that betchil lahachrisay. In the beginning was to cut him down because they thought that the death sentence, this Avner was killed, was from David HaMelech. Ola b'saif lahachrisay at the end. And that's why he went there to appease the people. They went to give him the mourner's meal, which is they understood that Avner was not killed from the plot of David HaMelech. Now, Amar Rabbi Yehudim Rav says, "B'mnei ma nenish Avner? Why was Avner punished and that he was killed? Because he should have protested against Shaul HaMelech when he killed out Noiv, the city of the Kahanim. And he didn't protest, so for that lack of protest, he was killed." He disagrees. He says, "No, Michal v'loy nena. He did protest, but Shaul did not respond to his protest." And says the Gemara, "V'shnei mekra echad darsha." These two interpretations, if he didn't protest or he did but it wasn't responded, both learn out from the same pasuk in Shmuel Beis, where it says, "V'yikoinin HaMelech el Avner v'yoyim," that David HaMelech moaned over the loss of Avner, and he said, "Hakamais novel yomus Avner," which means that is Avner going to die like a wicked person by the sword? "Yudecha loy asuris," your hands were not tied, "v'reglecha loy lenechushtayim hugashu," and neither were your feet tied to chains. Now, so what does this mean? Manda amar loy micha, according to Rav, who held that Avner had not protested against Shaul. So hachikam, and this is what David HaMelech was saying about Avner. "Yudecha loy asuris," your hands were not tied, "v'reglecha loy lenechushtayim hugashu," neither were your feet tied to chains. In other words, you had that freedom. You were a very respectable person to Shaul, and you should have protested. So therefore, my time aloy machisa, why didn't you protest? And therefore, that's what the pasuk concludes. Since you didn't protest, kinfol lefnei b'nei avla nefalta, that's why you fell like in front of those who were men of iniquity because of your lack of protest. But amando amam micha b'leinen, according to Yitzchak, who he says that no, Avner did protest but was not responded to. So actually, the way he reads the pasuk is ismamue misama. He learns that David HaMelech was wondering, "Hakamais novel yomus, is Avner going to die like a wicked person? Yedecha loy asuris, v'reglecha loy nechushtayim," your hands were not tied and your feet were not tied to chains. In other words, you did not accustom yourself like a person that was not respectable where he had his hands tied. Rather, with all your power and all your might, you revealed your intentions and you protested to Shaul. You weren't like someone that didn't have liberties and have choice to say what they wanted to say. You said it. So Mechti, let's see. David HaMelech was saying, "Mechuya Moches, you did protest." So my timer, therefore, the way he reads the pasuk is in a tone of wonderment. Can follow from Nebuchadnezzar and the Nefaltas? Then why is it that as one of you fell like one in front of the men of iniquity that you fell? Why would that be? So they're both learning from the same pasuk. One learning that because he had done something wrong. The other one wondering he had not done something wrong. Now the Gemara asks, so Laman Dama Micha, so according to the one who learns that he did protest, and then my Tameyanish. So why actually was he punished that he was killed? So Rav Nachman, and the Gir says, Bar Yitzchak says, Shesha Malchus Beis David Shtei Shon Memechse, because he delayed the monarchy of David HaMelech for a period of 2.5 years, because Avner had appointed Ish Boishes to be the king, and if Avner had not made him king, they would have appointed David HaMelech to be king. And the reason is from the reign of Ish-Boishes until David HaMelech ruled over the entire Jewish people was for a period of 2.5 years, because there was the 2 years that Ish-Boishes was the king, and then there was the half a year between his death and David HaMelech taking over the monarchy. And from when Shaul HaMelech passed away, David HaMelech was king in Hebron, where it says that he was a king in Hebron for 7.5 years. So you take away 5 years was between the death of Shaul and when Ish-Boishes became the king, as it's brought in the Brice and Seder Olam, which is the days that David HaMelech ruled, which we learned from a pasuk. So it comes out that the Malchus of the Jewish people was, no one was king for 5 years. So we see that for 5 years no one was the king, and then you have the 2.5 years, which is the period of the Malchus of Ish-Boishes, and then the half a year where it took till David HaMelech became king. So since he put up Ish-Boishes instead of David HaMelech, that delayed David HaMelech's reign for 2.5 years. For that Avner was punished. So again, those are two different interpretations, either because he did not protest against Shaul or because he put up as a king Ish-Boishes instead of David HaMelech. Now the Mishnah told us that when they come to give the mourner's meal to the king, so everyone sits on the floor and the king sits on the dargish. Ask the Gemara, my dargish, what is this dargish that the king sits on? So Ma'ula, he says, it's arsa de gada. What is that they had a custom that they would have a bed and a table in the house that they wouldn't utilize at all. It was just there for the mazel of the house, because as an omen, where the term arsa means bed, the gada means of mazel. It was the bed of mazel. Now, Amalei Rabban Le'ula, they asked, "Mi kamidi, is there such a thing? Da ara idna lo yisivne." Up until this point, that they would never have the king sit on that bed, because no one sits on such a bed. It's there just for the adornment of the house as a good omen. Now, Vahasha, now that he's a mourner, Maisvinle, we go and put him on this bed. For where we get such an idea that we'd put him on a bed that it's just there for ornamental purposes, as an omen. So that Maskeb Rav responds back and he asks, my kusher, why is that a difficulty? Dilma midi d'havachil v'shti, maybe it's the same thing as the eating and the drinking. The Ari, up until this point, lo yachaline v'leishkine, no one's giving the king to eat or to drink. He's a very wealthy person, has all his own things. Hashtar komachlinen le v'komashkin le, now they're giving him to eat and drink from other people's things. So you see that now is different, and therefore the same thing might be that although, yeah, up until this point, no one sits in the darkish, maybe by the morning's meal he does. Ela ikash, Sharatha says the Gemara that if you have a difficulty on Ula, it's Hakasha. It's this difficulty on this interpretation that he says it's the Ars of the God, it's the bed of good luck, because the Brisa teaches in Mayid Katan Dachav Zainim and Aleph that says, Dargish Einu Tzarech, that a mourner does not have to be Lachafaisa, he does not have to turn over this Dargish, Ela Zaykfei. Rather, he could just stand it up on its two bedposts, and that's it, he doesn't have to turn it upside down, as one has to do as an oval for the bed in his house. Now, says the Gemara, if you would entertain to say that what is dargish, it's the bed of good mazel, then why don't you have to turn it over? But in the Braisa, it says, if someone turns over his bed as a mourner, which the obligation is, it doesn't turn over just the bed that he sleeps on, rather he turns over every bed in his house. So this Ars of the God is a bed, it's not used, but it's a bed, and therefore it would have to be turned over. So if you're saying that this Dargish is the Ars of the God, then why does the Halacha say that you could just stand it up on this bedpost and you don't have to turn it over? So that the Gemara responds back, what do you mean, my kasha, why is that a difficulty? Maybe it's the same thing like a bed, which is not used for sleeping, rather it's designated for utensils. Because Iktani, as we learned, im hoisim yichedes lekelim, if this bed was designated just for utensils, for tools, in the tzarech lechvayis, you don't have to turn it over. Here, because it's not meant for sleeping purposes. Here also that the dargish, we could say it's arsa degada, and since it's not meant for sleeping purposes, that's why we don't have to turn it over. Ali kasha hakasha. Rather says the Gemara, if there is a difficulty in Ul's interpretation, it's from that brice over there which continues and says, Reb Shimon Gamliel, he says, no, by dargish, what you do is you don't just stand it up on its edges, on the bedpost. Rather, he says, matter, during the days of his mourning, he unties karvitin, the loops, and then the bed itself falls down from its post. So you just untie the loops, which keeps it attached to the bedpost, and it falls by itself. Now, if you're going to say what a dargish is, it's a regular bed, it's just a bed of good mazel, it's just not used, so karvitin me'islei, does it have loops? But isn't it just like every other bed, which regular beds don't have loops? So how can you say that the dargish is the ars of the gada if Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying that you untie the loops and let it fall to the bottom? So Eli Rather says the Gemara right. A different interpretation. Kiyasa Rav and Amar, he says, Amar lihim ahim ahum rabbanan, that one of the rabbis told me, Rav Tachlifa Shemen, his name was Rav Tachlifa, that he would frequent the marketplace of the leather makers. The Amr lay, my dargish, and I said to him, what is dargish? It's arsa ditzala. It's a bed out of leather, which what they would do is that they would tie the straps at the edge of the bedspread, which is made out of leather, around the bedpost, meaning when they want to have it, the actual mattress, which is not a mattress, made out of leather, they wanted to have it holding on to the bedpost, they would loop the straps around the bedpost, and when they would untie those loops, then the bedspread of the leather would just fall down. And that's what Reb Shimon Gamliel was talking about when he was talking about kavit in the loops, because that's how they would tie the leather bedspread onto the bedpost. Now, Reb Shimon Gamliel's his opinion is and also the Tanakam is that by the dargish, which is this bed made out of leather, although a regular bed you have to turn it upside down, by a leather bed, they were concerned to turn it upside down because they didn't want the leather itself to get ruined from the moisture of the ground. Because by the bed, they didn't have that the bedpost was higher than where the leather was tied over the bedpost itself. So the Tanakhama says what you could do is, so you just stand up the bed on the bedpost and facing upward. To which Rabbi Shimon said, no, you could untie the loops. And then it falls on the bottom, so you don't have the top of the bed getting ruined from the moisture. It's the bottom that's going to hit the floor, and that's okay. Those are two different ways to be mekayem the halacha, but kofin asamita without actually turning it over upside down. Now, Amr Bimer, Amr Biechanan, he qualifies and he explains. He says, Dargish, this that we're talking about, this Dargish, this leather bed, is a Katin Tamad Beis, Sirugai, that its tying was mitaychai, was from within the bed, the holes in the bedpost. They would stick in the edge of the straps, which were tied onto the leather bedspread, and loop it into the holes in the bedpost. And they would not go ahead and put the strap over the bedpost, rather in the bedpost there were holes, and they would loop it through. Whereas a mita, by a regular bed, siruga me'al gaba, they would take the ropes and they would tie it over the bedpost, over and over, and they would weave it over. That's the sirug that they had by a bed. That's the difference between how they would tie on a bed versus this dargish, this bed made out of leather. Now, on this interpretation, the Gemara asks Meisvei. So Mishnah says this client. The Mishnah says, Kli Eitz, a wooden utensil, some emesai mekabel tuma, when could it contract tuma? The reason is because a Kli is only mekabel tuma when it's finished. When it's not, then it's not considered Kli, and therefore it's not, does not contract tuma. So when would a wooden utensil be susceptible to tuma? Hamita varisa, so regarding a bed and a child's crib, it's mishe shufim ba'ur hadag. It's when you smooth it out with the skin of a fish, which is to smooth out the bedpost and to beautify it, which gives it a nice shine. Now that has the Gemara, v'imita misuregis himyal gabah, if it's like we just explained, that by bed, that they don't loop it through the bedpost like we do by a darkest, but rather we tie it over the bedpost. So lamali shibasar hadag, why would we need the smoothing of the through the fish skin on top of the bedpost, but its beauty is not recognizable because it's constantly covered by the ropes that are tied over the bedpost, and you don't see it anyway. Why would that be the qualification of considering that the end of making those wooden utensils, that of the bed and of the crib? So the rabbi says, "Gemara, you're right. Hava hamitaycha. Both the dargish and the mita are their straps go through the bedpost. There are holes in the bedpost. It doesn't go over; it goes through." But mita, regarding a bed, the actual bed would be, the ropes would be tied through the holes in the bedpost, and then they would tie it on the outside of the bedpost. But dargish, regarding the dargish, these leather beds, there would be loops that would be tied onto the holes of the bedpost. And that would be, then they would take the ends of the strips of the leather bedspread and tie it into those loops. And therefore, that's different than by the bed. By the bed, you would take it straight from those straps of the bed and tie it through the holes. Here, the edge of the straps of the leather bedspread would go tie into the loops, which those loops would go through the holes in the bedpost. Amr Yaakov and Rabbi Shub ben Levi says halacha kripshim liel, that he says regarding what by the oval, what you do is you don't just lift up the bed, you just, since as we said there are loops that are always tied into the holes, all you have to do is undo the straps that go into those loops, and then the leather bedspread just falls to the bottom. Amr Yaakov bar Ami, he says a related halacha, a mita, a bed shenakliteha, which its poles, that they would have these two long poles that they would put in the middle of the bed, one by the foot of the bed and one by the head of the bed, which the top of these poles were split on the top, which then they would put a rod from one pole from the foot of the bed to one pole by the head of the bed, and then that they would put the canopy over the bed. Now, some would actually take these poles and attach them to the bed itself, and that's what the halacha is saying, that if they're yates and if they're attached to the bed and they come out from the bed, and you can't, therefore now you can't just turn over the bed because you have these large poles that are sticking out, you can't just turn it upside down. So what you do is zaykfa, so you just stand it up, meaning by the foot of the bed or by the head of the bed, where the bedposts are going upwards, v'day, and that would be enough again for the halacha, as we said, of a mourner for turning upside down the beds, which you can't do that over there, so then you're zaykfa v'day. So although we say halacha zaykfa shim liel, that's by regarding a dargish where you could just let it drop. Most beds you can't just let it drop, so you have to turn it upside down. In this case, which you can't, so then you turn it on its side, and that would be enough. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, continuing on the theme of the previous Mishnah, is discussing halachas of a king. And he also takes out the kingdom to a voluntary war, which is every war besides the first war of Yeshua, al pi based on the courts of the Sanhedrin of 71 judges. Moreover, upayritz, he could breach other people's fences. Lasses loyderuch, to make a path for himself, for the king to go to his field or to his vineyard. Ve'ima machabiyadi, no one could protest against the king. So too, derech hamelech in leishir, the path that the king makes, has no measurement. He can make it as big as he wants to. Also, v'cholam bayzin, and all the people, they plunder when they're fighting against the enemy. V'noysen loy, and they give it to him, to the king. V'hu neitel chelik bereish, and he takes the first portion from the best portion, and he takes half of the plunder. Now the Gemara asked regarding the opening halacha of our Mishnah, Tanina Chadazimna, we already learned that once before in the opening Mishnah of the Masechta. We said, Eimetzin l'machemes rishos, you can't go out to a voluntary war, el api bezn shel shalom v'echad, unless you have the court of 71 judges. Says the Gemara, Aydi d'tonika mil d'melech, since we're teaching all the facets of the laws of kings throughout these Mishnahis, so Tanina Eimetzin l'machemes rishos, therefore we said and repeated going out to a voluntary war, because that's the king who orders that royal decree. And so therefore we repeat it here in the context of the laws of the kings. Amar Rav Yehuda Mishmul, he says, Kala Amar Beparshas Melech, whatever was said by the Parsha regarding a king, which is brought in Sefer Shmuel in Aleph Ches, which says many different things that you want a king, says Shmuel, no problem. But he could take your sons and your daughters and so on and so forth, many different things that says that the king has this executive privileges. So says Rav Yehuda Mishmul, Melech Mutar Boy, all those things, a king is actually allowed to do those things. Now, Rav Ami says, no. Lo nemar parsha zu. This parsha that's in Sefer Shmuel was not said, Ela la'ayim aleim. It was only to put the fear, the awe of the king on the Jewish people, but it's not that he's like allowed to do those things. He can't just take people's kids and sons and daughters and take them and do all those different things. It's just to say that you should fear the king because he can do these things, but the king actually is not allowed to do those things. Shnemelik says, the pasuk in Devarim, Soim tasam alach ha-melech. Place, you should surely place upon yourself a king, which tells you, that his fear should be upon you. That's why it was said, but not to say that actually the king could be allowed to do those things. So the Gemara Ketanoi, and this is similarly as Machlik is already in the Tanoim, where we find the Brice Rabbi Yisrael, he says, Kol Amar B'Parshas Melech, whatever was said there in the Parsha of the king in Sefer Shmuel, Melech Mutar Bo, king's allowed to do them. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, whatever was said in that parasha was only to put the fear of the king on the Jewish people. Shnemek says, and Pasik, surely place upon you a king, that his fear should be upon you. Now, Rashi says, not to have the girsa, as some would have it, liyar malabalam, that it was to scare them off, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, actually, as the Gemara is going to continue, that they actually did have the appropriate intent, because the Jewish people were commanded to have a king. He wasn't trying to scare you. Yeah, you want a king? You know what he can do? Okay, back off. No, they were commanded to have a king, but there has to be the fear of the king, and that's why we're saying it, but not to scare them off. As the Gemara continues and says, V'chein ha Yerbhuda Aymer. So Yerbhuda says, Gimel mitzvah nistava Yisrael b'chinasas la'aretz. There were three commandments that the Jewish people commanded when they entered into Eretz Yisrael. And it's these three mitzvahs because all of them say regarding inheritance and then settling in the land of Eretz Yisrael. For example, it says, N'dvar miyadzayim v'yirashti b'shafta, but you will inherit it and then you will dwell in it. V'amarta simulai ha-melech, and you say, I want to put on myself a king. That's the mitzvah of making a king. By the fighting Amalek, it says, in Devarim Chafei, V'ahoy b'neich Hashem, it's going to be when Hashem leaves you from all your enemies, and then you're going to be in Eretz Yisrael. And also regarding the building of the Beis HaMikdash, it says in Devarim Yudbeis, that V'avartim Masayard Mishatim Arz, you're going to cross the Jordan, you're going to settle in the land. And then it says, V'ahoy amokim, what's going to be the place that my Shechina will be? Again, we find all these three things that the element is when they enter Eretz Yisrael. Now the reason why I picked these three mitzvahs, because they're actually contingent one on the other to do in this order, as the Gemara is going to explain later on. Where first, it's Lahamad Lahamelech, first they have to appoint for themselves a king. Then, Lahachar Zar Shalamelech, then they have to cut off all the seed of the children of Amalek. And the third of all is V'livnis Lahem Beis HaBechir, then to build for them the chosen house, that of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, Reb Nara Aymer, he actually disagrees. He says, Lo Nemar Parsha Zu. Now, this Parsha of Soim Tasa Malacha Melech, that you should truly appoint a king on you, was not because, as Reb Yehuda taught, that it was a mitzvah. Ela Keneged Taramasan. That was actually only to contend with their complaints, where Hashem knew that they were ultimately going to complain regarding this, and they're going to say, oh, we want to be like all the nations who have kings, we also want that. Shlomo like says a pasuk in Devarim, "V'amarta," and you will say, "Asim alai melech," that I want to place myself a king, "v'goyim," etc., which you can end up saying that. So that's why it says to do this, but not that it was actually a mitzvah that Hashem wanted that they should have a king. Tanya Lina Brai said that actually Rabbi Elazar, I mean, he says, it actually depends. Zekeinim shebedar kahagin shalom. The elders in the generation of Shmuel, they actually asked appropriately, Shnemek says a pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, Tenu lanu melech l'shavteinu, give us a king to judge us. In other words, that they could judge and to contend with all these the wicked people that there are in the Jewish people. So that was an appropriate request. Aval amei ha'aretz shebehen kilkalu, but it was the ignoramuses of the generation that ruined it. Shnemek, like it says later on, where they said, oh yeah, we also want a king, v'yinu gam anachnu k'chal ha'goyim, because we also want to be like all the nations. Ushvatanu malkeinu v'yotze lefaneinu, that he'll judge us and he'll go out in front of us. And then they basically wanted that their wars should be fought by their king, where they said that he'll go out in front of us and he'll fight our wars, which was not for a noble purpose like the elders. It was for other non-elevated purposes, that of fighting a war, and therefore it was them who ruined it. Tanya learned the Braisa, which we referenced before, he says, Shalosh mitzvahs nitztav yisobach nesas la'aretz. There were three mitzvahs that the Jewish people commanded when they entered into Eretz Yisrael. First of all, lahamed le'melech, to appoint for them a king. Ulahachar zar shel malach, and then to kill out the people of a malach. And v'livnas lehem beis ha'bechira, and to build the beis ha'migdash. Now, ve'ein yedei es mentchilav, now, but I wouldn't know which one is first. But we know from the Pesukim, because Keshuayim, when the Pasuk says in Shemais, Ki Yadal Keis Ka, that because there's a hand on the throne of Hashem, which is the Melcham al Hashem ba'amalek, which is then to fight the war in Amalek, so you see from the Pasuk that first is Laham Alem Melech Tchila, it's the first appoint for them a king. How do you know that? Because it says first that you have the hand on the throne of Hashem, Ve'in Kisei El Melech, and when it says that the throne of Hashem, that refers to a king. Shem, like it says, the pasuk in Divrei Yom Aleph, "Vayeshiv Shleima al Kisei Hashem l'Melech," that Shleima Melech sat on the throne of Hashem to be as a king. So when it says that al Kisei Ka, who is that? That's a king who sits on the throne of Hashem. Now, Vadayin any day, but still I wouldn't know. So im limvdeis lehem beis habechir tchilif, to then first to build the beis hamikdash, or lahachar zara shel amalek tchilif, or then to first kill out the people of Amalek. When the pasuk says in Devarim v'nich lechem mikol eivecha megaymer, it says that when Hashem will leave you alone from all your enemies, and then you'll have to be able to build the place where Hashem's divine presence rests. That tells you that first, first you have to cut out the seed of Amalek, because that's first, Hashem will then leave you alone from your enemies that you'll have wiped them out. And then you go ahead and build the Beis HaMikdash. Similarly, we find by David HaMelech and Shmuel Beis, it says, "Vahiki Yashav HaMelech David Bebeise," that it was when David HaMelech was sitting in his house, "Vashem Hiniach Lo Misav," and Hashem left him in peace from those enemies from around him where he had already fought against Amalek. And then it says afterwards, "Vayim HaMelech al Nasan HaNavi," the king said to Nasan the prophet, "Re'ei, no, Anochi Yeshav Bebeis HaRazim," see, behold, that I'm sitting in a house of cedar, "V'gaymer," etc., which is, but Darein Elikim, the Hashem's divine presence, Yeshav Techairi, is just in the curtain. He said, I got to build a Beis HaMikdash for Hashem. We see, but that was only after that Hashem had left him from his enemies that he already fought against Zarei Shel Amalek. Now, related to one of the Pesukim we mentioned before, Omer Resh Lakish, he says, "B'tchila," in the beginning, before Shlema Melech had married these foreign women, "Malach Shlema Al Yoinim," Shlema Melech even ruled over those that are on above, meaning he ruled even over in like Shadim. Shlema, like it says in the Pasuk we mentioned before, "V'yashav Shlema Al Kisei Hashem," Shlema Melech even sat on the throne of Hashem, meaning he ruled over not only in this world, but even in the upper worlds. But later on, when then married foreign women, "Malach Al Tachtayim," he only ruled over this world down here. Shneimak, it says the pasuk in Malachim Aleph, it says ki hu raide b'chol ever hanar, because he ruled over the other side of the river, which is mitivsach v'ad Aza, which is from Tivsach till Aza. What does that mean? Rabbi Shmuel, Chad Amar, one of them, where the Rabbi Shmuel says Tivsach b'seif olam v'Aza b'seif olam. Tivsach was on one end of the world, and Aza is the other end of the world. So you see that he ruled over from one end to the other. And the other one says, no, actually, Tifsach v'Azah b'hadi adadi ha'v'yasvi. Actually, Tifsach and Azah were right near each other. What the Pasuk is saying is, Ukashem shemalach al Tifsach v'Azah, just like he ruled over Tifsach and Azah, because they were so close to each other, kach malach al kolam kulei, so he ruled over the entire world. And that's what the Pasuk is saying, that because he was right there in the entire, over the, meaning the rivers, where what separates Eretz Yisrael from the rest of the world, that he ruled over the whatever was on the other side of the river, just like from Tifsach v'Azah, which was so easy, so too, that's how he ruled over the entire world. Not Lubsaif, but at the end, Lo Malach El Al Yisrael. Later on, he only ruled over the Jewish people. Shalom says the pasuk in Kehelis, Ani Kehelis, I am Kehelis. Hayisi Melech Al Yisrael V'Gomer, I ruled over the Jewish people, which Shlomo Melech was Kehelis. See, ultimately, it was only over the Jewish people. Ulbasaif, and later on, Lo Malach El Al Yerushalayim, he only ruled over Yerushalayim. Shalom says a different pasuk in Kehelis, Devar Kehelis Ben David, Melech Yerushalayim, these are the words of Kehelis Ben David, the king over Yerushalayim. Ulbasaif, Lo Malach El Al Mitas, at the end, he only ruled over his own bed. Shlomo says the pasuk in Shir Hashirim, He named Tasa Shalom, behold the bed of Shalom, Begoyim, etc., which says that Shishim Gibarim Savala Megbari is told that he had 60 mighty people of the mighty ones of Jewish people surrounding his bed, which that was protecting the monarchy, which was basically for him only his bed at that time. Well, Basayif, and ultimately, Lemalach Elal Makli, he only ruled over his stick, which that refers to the incident brought in Masechtas Gittin Samaches Amabez, where Ashmedai, the king of the Shadim, threw him out from his throne and launched him out, 400 parsa out. That was, so he only ruled over his stick. Shnem, like it says, the pasuk in Kehelis, Zeho Yechelki Mekalamali, this was my portion from all my hard work. Which Rav Ushmul, Chadam one says it means Makli, meaning he was left with just his stick. Chadam Agunda, another one says he was left with just his cloak. That's what he ended up being just ruling over. Now the Gemara asks, Hadr Oilai Hadr, did he ultimately reclaim his monarchy or not? So it's a machlekes, Rav Shmuel, Chadam Ahadr, one says he ended up going back and becoming king again. Chadam Oilai Hadr, one says that no, he lived out his days just ruling over his stick or his cloak. Now, Mandam Oilai Hadr, the one who says he never went back was Melch of Hedyet, that he started off as a king but he ended as a commoner and he never went back to his kingdom. Well, Mandam Mahadr, the other one who says he went back was Melch of Hedyet and Melch. He was a king, was a commoner, and then he ended up and becoming king back again. Now the Mishnah said that Poritz Las Leiderach, the king could breach whatever wall fence that's in his way to get to his fields or to his vineyards, and etc., which we said that when it comes to the plunders of war, they give it to him and he takes the first portion, the best portion. Now Tarnbon Linda Brysa that explains that Eitris Malachim Lamelch, when they plunder another king's treasury, that goes to the king. For Sharbiza Shabbaisim and all the other plunder that they take, this is what we say, he takes first, he takes half, goes to the king, and half goes to the people. Now that Omali Abayel, Rav Dimi, Abayel asked Rav Dimi, Vamala, and some say that he asked Rav Acha, Bishlam Oitzis Malach and Lamelach, I can understand the halacha of the Braisa, that the treasury of one king, when they conquer that kingdom, that goes to the king, because Orcha Demilsa, it's only appropriate, normal, that the treasury of a king should not go to the people, rather goes to the king that conquered. El Shar Biza Shabbaisim, regarding the rest of the money, the rest of the stuff that they plunder, Mechtzalam, this that half goes to the king, half goes to the people, Manolam, where do we know that from? So now the Gemara answers the Chilak, it says the Pasuk in Divri Yom Aleph, as we get teamed up with Chaf Aleph and Aleph, it says in the Pasuk, Vayimshechu Lashem Lonogid, that they anointed to Hashem the prince, the ruler, which refers to Shlomo Melech, Ule Tzadik, and for Tzadik, which was HaKoyin, which is that he became the Koyin Gadol. Now, Makish Nogad Le Tzadik, the Pasuk is equating the king to Tzadik, who was the Koyin Gadol, which teaches us, Ma Tzadik Mechtzaloi Mechtzalachim, just like by Tzadik when he was the Koyin Gadol, that when they come to divide, as we're going to shortly see, half will go to the Koyin Gadol, half goes to the regular Kanim, Af Nogad, so too it's telling us that regarding the king, Mechtzaloi Mechtzalachim, when they have the plunders, the spoils of war, half goes to the king, half goes to the rest of the people. On that, as the Gemara, but Tzadik Gufim, and how do we know by Tzadik, the Kohen Gadol, that when he shares with the rest of the Kohanim, he takes half and they split only the other half? So as the Gemara, they're telling, the Brice, Rebbe Yemi, he says, the Pasim Yikra says, V'haysela Arnu Levanov, which refers to the Lechem upon the 12 showbreads that were split every single Shabbos, that it says that it will be for Aaron and his sons. Now, we already know that Aaron is a Kohen, that of course he's going to get just like his sons. Why is it mentioned him separately? To tell you, Mechtzel Aaron, Mechtzel Abanov. Half of the breads go to Aaron, half of the breads go to his sons. So you see that regarding Tzadik HaKayin, who's the Kohen Gadol, that half goes to him, half gets split amongst the rest of the Kohanim. So it's comparing the king to Tzadik HaKayin, it's saying so too by the Biza of the Melchama, that half goes to the king first, and then the other half is split amongst the people.